Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie. Well, hello, Barbara. Hi, groomers. Thanks for being here with us this morning. This is episode 187 of the Groom Pod, recorded on November 11th, 2018 in Snohomish, Washington, and Tucson, Arizona. This podcast is brought to you by listener support through Amazon and Patreon and through our kind sponsors at Best Shot, South Park, Show Season, Stasco, and Evolution Shears. Whew, that was a lot. Okay, this week on the Groom Pod, we're going to talk about stripping tools, oregano, and the Groomer Licensing Act. You can join our discussion by finding us on Facebook at facebook.com/group/thegroompod. Subscribe to the Groom Pod when you can. Find all things Groom Pod related, including the Amazon banner, Patreon button, and donation button at the website, www.thegroompod.com. Thanks for sharing us with all your pals and continue to support our sponsors. All right, Barbara, how's your week been?
Hey, I had a real interesting week, but, you know, before we jump in about ourselves, I want to just say a little prayer or something for all our groomer friends in California that are being traumatically affected by the fires. You know, California is freaking burning down.
I know.
And we've already seen naming of three of our Facebook groomer friends who've lost everything. Businesses, homes, you know, just getting out of there with the clothes on their back and their pets. And it's just horrible.
I can't imagine.
It's devastating to even think about it. But there is a link where you can, like, send a few bucks. I mean, I'm going to send a few. I can't send $100. I'm in a real broke situation right now. I can send five from my PayPal, and I just encourage everybody to just help out, because it's awful over there, and the California Groomers Association will be dealing with it, and I think we should support them.
What we're thinking is, you know, no matter what kind of a dog it is, groom one dog for the groomers who've lost everything, and then send the money down to the groomers that are going to help out those guys. Yeah, and that link is up on our discussion group, and we'll try to keep that up at the top.
All right. Good.
But it's so horrible. I cannot imagine. One of my secret fears is burning up. I have a fear of that. We don't have any candles. No candles at all.
Yeah, I don't do candles anymore, because I had a couple of near misses sort of things, you know, where I realized I wasn't candle responsible. There are flameless candles now that give you the atmosphere without danger, the hazard. So yeah, I'm afraid of fire and floods, but I'm just heartsick for these groomers that have suddenly lost everything. So one of the things that I did in my shop in the last week is that I have been selling leashes and collars. You saw my whole wall. You know what, Susie? I took all of those down, put them in a box, and sent them to the Goodwill.
Good for you. I support that.
You know, I had leashes that I've had up there since nearly 10 years. And I sell one a year. That's just, it's a mess. And it's just further cluttering up my space. And so we just like cleaned off that whole wall.
Excellent.
That's done. And my platform scale came. It arrived. We've started weighing our dogs and our customers. And the bad news is that when I do the technique of weighing, where I weigh myself and then zero out my weight, and then I'm given the dog and I get the dog's weight without any squirming around, you get a real settled weight. It means I have to look at my own weight.
That's not a bad thing.
Several times a day.
This
platform scale might end up impacting my life and my health more than my customers. Because there it is. Hey, honey, I'm over 200 pounds and I gotta carve that down. And I have to, you know, like I have to face that reality then every time I weigh somebody else's dog. So I'm very much trying to get the dogs to stand on the scale by themselves. I like that technique. Come on, Rufus, you can do it. You know, like, and it, you know what? It's a nice big platform. The bigger doodle dogs are going to fit on there. I weighed my two doodles, and we're starting a little card file with everybody's information.
Well, that's cool that you got your scale in. So are you writing it on the cards?
What I want to do is train the customers to get their own weight every time, you know, so that I don't have to do it. But the truth is, when I'm at the shop, what I do, the finish work, it takes much less time than what Yvonne does, which is the bath and brush. And so I have time in my day that I'm now, instead of playing a game of solitaire and relaxing while I wait for the next dog, I'm weighing the last dog or something like that, you know? And I'm weighing them after they get their hair cut, so I'm not weighing the hair. And but, you know, I had one customer that was like appalled at their dog's weight and says, well, I've got to do something about that. Right away, the number, others that's say, right. Yeah, others are saying, yeah, that's what their only weight. But now the next phase is to get the body conditioning score thing going. So I'm going to also give each dog my assessment of their body conditioning score. Ooh. And so we're putting all of that information on a card that goes under the pet's name and can easily be, you know, accessed by the customer. And so once we start getting a list, they might be wanting to look at what did they weigh back in November? Yeah. You know? Yeah. So I'm excited. So that's going and people are complimenting it. And I cleaned out that corner. It's on the other side of my counter. The whole shop is kind of getting a makeover as well as adding this new service that I'm really excited about. So I've got a story to tell you, Susan.
Okay. I like a story.
This isn't grooming related, but it is client related.
Okay.
But it's kind of Barbara's life related.
All right.
So we all know that I've had many personas.
Many.
Many personas. You know, I've got the blues singer thing. I've got the, you know, the African percussionist thing going.
The dog groomer thing.
The dog groomer thing, the academic thing, and all of this. So I have a fairly new customer with a little dog named Franck, and Franck's dad is about my age, and he's a working psychologist.
Okay.
And he has a doctorate in psychology. And I think he's associated with the University of Arizona. He's doing some teaching, some kind of professorial duties.
He's a big head shrinking mucky muck.
Yeah, he is. But a really nice guy. And I've been curious about him. There was something in me was like drawn to him, you know, and I was thinking, you know, like here's somebody that I could talk to on an intellectual level. It's kind of nice to do that. We started talking about our educations. He asked me when I graduated from the U of A, and I said, well, I graduated in 1966, but I'm actually class of 1965, and my graduation was delayed in a year because I didn't get a term paper in on time. And we laughed at that. And he said, you know, I graduated class of 65. So suddenly we were like peers.
Yeah,
we were like peers. And so then I said, well, I went on to he said, did you go further than that? I said, yeah, I went to Arizona State University and got my master's in social work. And he said, well, that's interesting. I got my master's in social work from Arizona State University.
That's weird.
He said, but I took a couple of years off, did some time with the Marines. I said, oh, that's interesting. And so then he said that he went back to ASU and worked on a research program with the School of Social Work. And I said, well, I worked at ASU as a research associate on in the School of Social Work. So there we were really close. And he dropped the name of the man that he worked for, the professor that was the director of the program, the research program.
Yeah.
And I worked for that guy for 2 years.
And so we had world.
And so he couldn't believe it. And he said, who are you? And I said, Barbara Bird. He said, no. I mean, his mouth just fell off his face. It turns out that I was the assistant to the research director. And he was a team member out in the field. And I supervised them.
You were his boss?
I was his freaking boss. 40 years ago.
Oh my God.
Can you believe that? And we just laughed and well, nice meeting you again. And we said, you know, I didn't know whether to run and hide or to hug him, you know, like, right. where do you go with that kind of a revelation? And can you imagine him being this high mucky muck scholarly professor and find out that his dog groomer? And it didn't end there.
Oh, really?
He went home. And he came back about 45 minutes later, and he was carrying a book. And he put it down on the counter, and he said, come here, I want to show you something. And I went over there, and he turned the book around so that I could read it. And it was his master's dissertation. You know, wow. One of the things that you do, you have to publish a work of research, and you have to defend it.
Okay.
So you defend it, you know, like you go before this it's just scarier and shit. You go before all of these heads and they ask you about your methodology and your results and your statistics and, you know, your writing and all of this kind of stuff. Well, you know, I did that. He did that. But here's his dissertation. I said, I have no idea where my dissertation is. He says, well, check this out. And he opened the book and on the cover page, it identified it as the piece of work of research that was necessary for him to get his master's degree in social work. And he pulled that page over and where it says approved by, it was me. It was me. There's my signature. I signed off on this man's master's thesis at the School of Social Work in like 1969. Do you believe that?
And now he's coming to you for dog grooming.
And now he's coming to me for dog grooming.
I love it.
Oh, it was absolutely mind-blowing.
That's crazy. Well, that's a far more better week than I had.
So what happened to you this week?
Oh, the drama continues. Remember, I lost my cell phone and then all of my contacts wouldn't port over.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if I had discovered or not yet at the time of our recording last time. Oh, no, because we did the interview that could not be aired, the interview that we will not talk about. So you didn't know this. So in between that and this week, I found out that the scheduling program I have used for 9 years was going to close off on Friday, like as in 2 days ago. Like I had 5 days to pick a new program to run my scheduler through. And I have looked at 123 Pet and some others, but I remembered MoGo, MoEGO, MoGo. And I remembered that they are members of our group. And I went and looked at their software offering. And they have actually a free version of their software, which pretty much covers everything that I use, which is the contact list and the calendar. That's the only thing I really use my scheduling program for, because everything else I've got backed up on hard copy and other ways. And so I downloaded it And I was looking at it and they immediately contacted me, which was really cool because I didn't say anything, but they saw that I had downloaded the program and contacted me. And they gave me an offer where they will move over your contact list.
Ah.
Which, oh my, what a lifesaver that was. So I went over before they shut off M Groomer, which now I will stop telling people to use it because obviously he's not going to do it anymore. But I was able to download reports in a form in Excel, I think, and then send it over to Mogo, and they downloaded my entire client base. It's a really colorful program, and it has all kinds of neat options. The premium version, I think, is $40 a month for the lowest tier of the premium version. And in that, it includes smart scheduling and automated reminders and automated review requests and all kinds of neat things like that, which is awesome if you want to use that stuff. For me, I don't necessarily need that. I'm kind of already established and my routing is a little wacky and I don't know that smart scheduling will help me. But when you do schedule an appointment, it does find the next available appointment for you. Which,
wow,
that's pretty cool. Took me a minute to get used to it, but I absolutely love it. I'm so grateful for them. And I can't wait to maybe delve into some of the premium services for a month or two so that I can review it even better. Hey, even if they want to give me a month of the premium service so that I can talk about all those other options, I'd be happy to use it for a month too. Although I'm really happy that I don't have to pay to use the form that I'm using and that they were so helpful. And boy, you can text them and they're right there and that is worth their weight in gold. The bad thing is the pets didn't transfer. So I had to enter the pets. And the other thing is the calendar did not transfer. So in a panic last week, I sent Barbara a message saying, oh my God, we can't air the interview and I can't do anything about it because I just found out I have to move my whole entire calendar. And for you guys who schedule a month out, that's fine. I schedule indefinitely. I have repeating appointments. Everybody's a repeating appointment. They get their Monday at 3 o'clock appointment. They get that Monday every 4 weeks at 3 o'clock. That's kind of how I do my schedule. I have a few openings where I can put people who can't adhere to a rigorous schedule like that and have to be more flexible. I've got spots for them, but the majority of my people like that I'm consistent and predictable and that their appointment falls on the same time every month and, you know, they can just plan for it. So I had to print a year's worth of my schedule so that I didn't miss the cat that gets groomed every 4 months that I have the appointment down, or my dental cleaning that's 6 months from now, all the weird appointments in amongst all of my heavily repeating schedule. It's awful. And it was all consuming. It took me so long, but I weeded out people's pets that I didn't need to have in my bank anymore because that takes up space. I also weeded out clients that I don't see anymore. They've got a really nice feature where you can make someone inactive. So if all their pets have died, but you know they're going to get another pet, you don't delete them. You just make them inactive. Then you can just move them right back over. Plus, they've got billing so that you can keep count of your day, how much you're making through the day. It's fully customizable. Anyway, I'll share more about that as I go along and adventure in through the software. But I'm so happy I found it, and I cannot recommend it enough at this point. So you'd think that was enough, right? You'd think that would be enough to screw your week up. But no. I was working yesterday, day before yesterday, happily grooming away. And once again, that lovely smell of carbon infiltrated my trailer and I was drying a dog. And I knew what that meant. My canine tube brushes are going. And as I was standing there drying the dog, I'm thinking, why is it taking me forever to dry this dog? And then I realized only one of the two motors was working. Mm. That'll make a difference.
That'll make a dog. Right. Yeah.
Husband of the show is a great fix-it guy, mechanic, handyman. Plus, he's got a 3/4 of a degree in electrical engineering, so he's great with wiring and stuff. The only thing that ever stumped him about 11 years ago was my very first K9 2 dryer, because it's so freaking hard to get the second motor out. Getting the first motor out, no problem. Undoing all the cords, removing the switches, and then backing that second motor out is a challenge. It takes some technique. And there's some tricks out there that we didn't have 11 years ago when he went after that first motor. Well, I came home yesterday and I called our local dryer repair guy. So Wesley is really backed up I thought maybe I would ask my husband to tackle it again, since I know that Trevor from Electric Cleaner Company has put up some videos on how to pull the motors and how to put them back in.
That's nice to know.
Yeah. And so my husband is a really good learner off of YouTube. YouTube is great for him. He just goes, he watches the YouTube video and he has all of the tools in them. So just getting that last motor out was all he needed to figure out and everything else he could do. So he basically rebuilt that canine too in about 10 minutes.
Wow.
And a light bulb came on because he has nothing to do all day. And I thought, that is the hardest dryer for anybody to get fixed. Most of our local dryers are sitting there with Wesley right now waiting to be fixed. How cool would it be if there was somebody you could pay a little bit extra to who would actually do it overnight and you would get it back the next day? And so I proposed this to my husband, and he is so excited about this prospect of doing this because he's got, now he's built a tool to push the motor back in and another one to pull the motor out with, and it'll make it even easier for him. And he loves doing that. He loves working with his hands. He loves fixing stuff. And I like nothing better but than to facilitate my friend groomers who are in a bad position a way out. And if somebody can drive out here, drop their canine two off, and maybe he'll deliver it back out to them in the morning or something like that. So right. I think that's what we're going to do. So if you're in the area and you need your canine two done, let me know.
I need my canine two done. I'll just drive up from Tucson.
Or I'll drive down and pick it up. How fun would that be? So I have something else to tell you about, Barbara.
What's
that? We have new Patreon people, and I haven't been able to keep up with it. So I'm hoping I'm getting everybody here. We have Amy Lopez, Brian Beecham, and Amy Ganos, three new Patreon members. I think
welcome.
Yeah, hopefully I didn't delete anybody accidentally. If I missed you, let me know and I'll announce your name on air. But I think that does it. Let's take a break, and then we're going to come back with our discussion about stripping tools. We've all been there. Your appointment shows up and it's a matted mess. The products you choose can make a huge difference in the end result. The Ultramax line by Best Shot is the perfect solution. It was engineered for serious professionals to get dirty jobs done right. The Ultramax system starts with the shampoos. Ultramax Pro is a dilute as needed shampoo. Use it directly on the coat for degreasing, 15-to-1 for deep cleaning, 50-to-1 for light cleaning, or anything in between. It's perfect for recirculating bathing systems. And there's also Ultramax Clarifying Shampoo. Ultramax Pro Conditioner is so light but so powerful. It has Best Shot's special coat-releasing technology for superior de-shedding and de-matting. It never adds drying time and works great in recirculators. And a body splash. The whole Ultramax line features a modern sweet pea fragrance. This isn't your grandma's perfume. It's delightful. Whether it's Ultramax, One Shot, Ultra Wash, or any of the Best Shot lineup, you can expect the finest quality and true performance. They'll help you make masterpieces out of nightmares in record time. Find Best Shot products at quality distributors and online at bestshotpet.com. Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. I don't do a lot of stripping, Barbara, because it kills my hands and I never really learned to do it properly. And I have my other areas of expertise. I figure I don't want to be a jack of all trades. I kind of want to focus in on things that I already know I have a talent for. Stripping is not one of them. But you, on the other hand, are a really good stripper. So what I'd like you to do is...
I am.
and you're still doing it.
I'm still doing it, and with mixed feelings about my hands, because just about everything hurts my hands, but I'm committed to hand stripping. I love it. It's like one of those things that comes around that just like connects with your inner curiosity and in such a way that it's just so interesting to see how the coat grows back in, and little every single one is it's a little adventure. Yeah, it's fascinating.
And
I only work with dogs that will allow the hand stripping. Not all dogs are good candidates for that. Yesterday I had 2 Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, and you wouldn't think of that as a stripping breed, but all sporting dogs, spaniel type dogs, need carding of the undercoat. And one of the 2 of these really needs it. The one of them doesn't produce any fuzzy stuff at all. And the other one is a neutered male, and he's got a really fluffy coat. So I not only card out, but yesterday I was plucking out some of the longer, but definitely needed to be removed hairs to get a nice flowing profile. Yeah, I love doing it, and I will only do 1 dog a day or 2 very small dogs. Let's talk about tools, because there was a question on our group about, could stripping knives be used as carding tools? And by all means, you can do that. But you need to know how to do it. A blade is a blade. You can also use an old blade. You can use an old 40 blade, and you can hold it in your hand and card out undercoat. So the difference between hand stripping and carding is that carding out fuzzy stuff is a part of hand stripping, but it's also done on breeds that are not truly hand stripped. And one of the tools that we're all familiar with that's a carding tool is the Furminator.
Yes.
So what is the Furminator? But it's like a 30 blade on a weighted handle. And one of the things that we know about Furminator tools is that if not used correctly, it can cause abrasion of the skin. So this is true of all carding. If you're too aggressive and using too much pressure, maybe because you're in a hurry, you can abrade the skin and cause an issue. So you need to be careful in whatever you use. I probably use my stripping knives more to card out than I do to use them for stripping, for plucking, because what I use for plucking the most is a piece of a pumice stone or a lava stone. I have these horse lava blocks that I get. Well, I cut a piece of that off, vet wrap around half of it, and then I can hold it in my hand, and it's like ergonomic for me.
Is it crumbly?
No, not too.
Okay. I've never been able to get it to work very well.
It will wear down. It will wear down, you know, but I don't get a lot of crumbles. You were putting too much pressure on it.
Story of my life. So I use gloves. I just use rubber gloves when I do
I use rubber gloves always. So what I was doing yesterday, I stripped out that little Cavalier King Charles Spaniel with just a stripping knife, and I would have the dog facing me, and I'm carding from neck to tail. I'm carding back. So I'm carding away from myself. Instead of trying to card to myself, I just like to do that away from myself. Because
so you're pushing instead of pulling.
I'm pushing. Yeah, and I think it's a little bit easier on my hand to do that. And I use whatever size stripping knife works. I like the McClellan stripping knives, and I often use the fine one for doing that kind of carding.
I like the classic. I like the classic one.
The classic one is a classic.
It works in my hand. I wrap that wrap around the handle to make it a little more comfortable.
And that is a tool that you see at the dog show. That's where I first what first got me to buy a classic stripping knife was that I saw it in use as a carding tool at the dog show. I go snoop on the handlers and see what's in the, you know, like, I'm just a spy.
Lots of stuff to be learned there, though.
There's a lot of stuff to be learned. And usually they're very comfortable in telling you about it, you know, and they've got some odd things that they might be using. But the classic stripping knife, it's also nice because it has a wide blade. So there's just a real comfortable place for your thumb.
There's quite a variety in the way the stripping knives look. Some of them have a really long handle and then just a little tiny end. The classics have a big end. I like the big end.
I like the big end too. And that's what I don't like about the Chris Christensen stripping knives. They're beautiful. And the wood, he always picks really nice wood.
Yeah, he sure does.
Chris Christensen knows wood. And he picks really nice wood for his tools. So the stripping knives are beautiful. And they come in all kinds of sizes. The size is determined by the distance between the teeth on the blade, by the way.
Okay.
So it's not a matter of the length of the handle or anything. It's always the size is determined by the distance between the teeth and the blade. But, you know, like holding that tiny head.
Yes.
It kills me. It kills my arthritic thumbs. I just can't use those kinds of. So I'm much more interested in that kind of stripping knives, you know.
And the classics are that.
Yeah, and the McClellan has a nice groove in the hand, so you can put your thumb right in that, and that's why I am so fond of the McClellan knives. And the McClellan knives are not costly. They're very good, and they're not costly. They can be used for carding. Another instance of where you might want to card is, again, on your Spaniels or even on double-coated dogs, is like down the front of the foreleg, you know, and the rear leg, where there's fuzzy stuff in there that just doesn't come out when you blow dry it. But if you start carding, you get a lot of stuff out, and it just makes that line look nice and smooth, and it brings shine. It's very interesting. The more you card out a coat, the more what's left is the coat that's still non-porous. So it's reflecting light and being nice and shiny.
And it seems like if you card those shoulder areas or like under the ears on a golden retriever or in those fluffy areas, that it doesn't come back quite as fast. Like if you cut that off, it seems to just didn't grow long and it just looks thicker and it's still there. But if you card it out, it actually stays gone a little bit
better. Longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just as an aside, the shampoo that we use on the Cavalier, what I love about Cavalier King Charles Spaniels is the tricolor, you know, the white, dark gold, and the black. We use the Show Season Bright shampoo. Oh, my God, those dogs' coats looked good.
You know what I like about them? Their personality. They're just sweet.
They're sweet dogs. They're cute. Yeah, yep. These two. This was their second time to us, and I really laid it on. We just love your dogs. I want them to come back because they're fun.
Yes, they make your day better. They just make your day better.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't agonize over stripping knives. What works for you is the best stripping knife. And the reason that there's a lot of options is because everybody's hands are a little bit differently. And Susie and I have the same problem with severe arthritis in our base of our thumbs that makes us want a bulkier thing to hold on to. And that's part of the reason why I'm still hand stripping, is because I've found these ways to strip with a more ergonomic for me tool.
Now, as a rule, if you're doing it just with your hands, you're not pinching it like you pinch out an ear hair, right? You're more going against your finger and pulling it this way. Does that, how do you visually explain that? You're taking your thumb and you're putting it on top of a curled index finger, pinching the hair through your thumb and your finger and pulling it that way, not the ends of your finger. You're not pinching the ends of your finger together and pulling hair that way. Because if you do that, you will not be doing that very long. Your hands will fall apart.
Your hands will fall apart.
So you use your index finger like a table and your thumb like the grabber, and you pull it out that way a few hairs at a time. With the gloves or a rubber finger or in the same kind of emotion against a stripping knife, right?
And I use powdered latex gloves, because if you get the non-powdered, which are what's really popular, they don't, it's the powder that does the job. And one thing that you can do is use ear powder on your gloved hand or on the hair to make for better gripping. Because ear powder contains rosin, which, as Susie knows from her gymnastics career, is the ultimate gripping substance.
Absolutely.
So, and it doesn't hurt the coat or anything. You can put it on the coat. The problem with doing that is that the powder kind of covers up the color of the coat, and the color is what helps you determine which hair you're going to pull out, right?
Of course,
You're pulling out dull hairs, hairs that have lost their shine. They're the old ones. They're out of here. And when you put the powder on the coat, you kind of lose that perception. If you just continue to powder your gloved hand, it will improve the grip, which I'm going to remember next time, because what I ended up doing is just like going through a lot of gloves.
Yeah, I feel guilty about that.
Yeah.
So, for somebody who's just going to start hand stripping, what kind of a dog would you pick?
I would pick a Border Terrier.
Ah, I knew you were going to say that. And now that I groom one, I totally get why. What a cool dog they are.
Oh, they're cool dogs. They generally don't have big issues about having their hair plucked.
And no pattern.
And no pattern to worry about. It's just like all over, you know. It's a little bit more stripping than you would do on, like, say, a Norwich Terrier, but it's a kind of a no-brainer. The only thing that you have to know how to do is the face.
Oh,
the head.
Sure.
You need to study that, because you want to get that otter look.
Very unique. So I had a really cool thing happen to me on Facebook. Remember way back in the probably beginning of the podcast, or it might have even been pre-podcast, I was doing a couple Irish setters and they were just killing my hands. They're big dogs, and I really liked the people and the dogs were fine, but it was killing my hands, and I finally made the tough choice to give them up.
Well,
the client's daughter contacted me. Guess what she's doing?
She's grooming.
And they have a young setter, a young Irish setter at the house that they clipped early, accidentally. I mean, she was working with a mentor who was teaching her to groom, and they clipped her, the dog, and it kind of wrecked the coat. At least for a little while, it wrecked the coat. And I was trying to give her some pointers, tips, and encouragement. And after reading some of the posts on our Groom Pod list, it got me thinking, it's the first, I mean, it was just a one-time clipping. I think this dog's coat will probably survive that and grow back in. How can I help her make the grow-in period a little bit better? Just lots of carding?
Lots of carding. It can be a real bitch. I mean, it depends a lot on the genetics of that individual dog. But I've had terriers where it was too much of a challenge. I've had wire fox terriers, and they're really important to hand strip, because you just lose their lovely coloring when you clip. But not all once clipped dogs are recoverable. You know, you have to be realistic. The dog has to tolerate quite a bit, because when you start plucking a clipped coat, it's going to be less comfortable. It's going to be more uncomfortable for you. It's harder to pull the coat, and for the dog, because it's harder. You're tugging more. The hairs are not going to fall out in your hands like they would on a virgin, never been clipped coat. And I disagree that there's always going to be good coat coming in once you start that. That if you're lucky, that's what happens. But it doesn't always happen. For some reason, I think that you lose the follicle for the primary hairs and you have all this fuzzy stuff, or and even the primary hairs are thinner and less attractive and more secure in the follicle, so it's harder to pull them. It's
my thought is that I need to go over to say hi to her parents and her as well. Anyway, I think she's going to listen to this, so that's cool. And see the dog myself and see what the coat looks like and what the dog looks like. And maybe I can give her a little bit better advice that way. But how cool is that?
It's really cool. Yeah, I love it when things come around.
Yep. It's very heartwarming. And the people are so nice. And I really loved the dogs. My hands just didn't. All right. Another break. And we'll be back to school. Groomers, we all know that the first thing doggy moms and dads do when they pick up their beautifully coiffed babies from us is they go in for a cuddle, right? That first cuddle is so important because it gives them the opportunity to really enjoy their freshly groomed and sweet-smelling pups. Well, our friends over at South Bark Professional Pet Products have a new item that's sure to bring a smile to all of those pet parents and groomers, too. South Bark, as you know, is the originator of the now famous South Bark's Blueberry Facial. They are located in sunny San Diego, California, where founders Lisa Vella and Donna Walker, also known as the Blueberry Girls, operate a dog wash and consumer pet store, as well as a wholesale distribution center. These amazing ladies have come up with an entirely new product that really has us here at the Groom Pod excited. It's a foaming cleanser with a fabulous new fragrance. It smells like blueberries and coconut, two of my personal favorite smells. I can't wait to try it. It's good for slobber mouth, goober eyes, and strategic stinkiness. The real neat thing is that you don't have to rinse it out. And to top it off, it's a foam, so it's extra safe for using around the eyes. You know how much Barbara and I love foam for faces. South Bark's Blueberry Coconut Pet Foam comes in a generous 8.5-ounce foamer and is safe for use on dogs, cats, puppies, and kittens. This is sure to be a favorite in shops as a retail item or in the bathing room for pre-washing faces and loosening those eye boogies. If you would like more information or to place an order, you can go to the website www.southbarkprofessionalpet.com or you can call them at 1-877-232-2235. And remember to look for the Blueberry Girls and their products at many of our grooming trade shows and seminars.
Groomers, take your seats. School is about to begin.
Well, this is exciting, Barbara. I have a really good veterinary vocabulary this week.
Oh, hit me.
It's three vocabulary words.
Oh, hit me.
Sanitize, disinfect, and sterilize. Ha! Ah! How about that?
Yeah.
Do you know the difference? I thought I did. And then I looked up a bunch of different websites and I got such conflicting information. I just got like crazy conflicting information. Like, what's your impression of the three? Do you have an impression? I mean, do you have
Well, I have it's levels. It has to do with the level of disinfection. You know, so and a lot of times these terms are not appropriately applied.
That's
so it's better if you go into a governmental, governmental websites. They're sticklers for the proper terminology. So
that's where I ended up.
Yeah, did you end up in a governmental site?
not just a governmental site, but one for crime scene cleanup.
Ah,
recommendations for crime scene cleanup.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting because there's, you know, like there's hospital level of disinfectant sanitation. Sanitation is basic cleaning.
Right.
Right. Disinfection is to a reasonable kill of the existing pathogens or undesirable microorganisms, and sterilization is 100% kill of anything that's biocidal.
You are right on track here. Let me read to you what I learned from the biohazard site. Sanitation process decreases the number of microbes on the surface, thereby reducing the number of pathogenic microbes present. It is the weakest of the three. Disinfecting reduces the number of microbes to a point beyond the level of sanitizing, so the number of pathogenic microbes is so low that it is extremely unlikely to harbor harmful microbes. It is effective and safe to the person doing it and is usually applied to a pre-cleaned surface. So you clean it first and then you disinfect it. The third one, sterilization, is reserved for the most dangerous microbes, such as anthrax or for surgical equipment. Sterilizers kill all microbes. They are dangerous to use and are typically reserved for super controlled situations. Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
I thought it was really interesting. I totally went down the biohazard rabbit hole there. We won't discuss the rest of that. All right. Grooming glossary. Do you know what self-colored is? Self, like myself.
Self-colored. Is that like stains from licking?
Nope. It's all one color. It's like we did Sable last time. Well, we did self, meaning it's a dog that's all one color. Like a lab that's black or brown or blonde is, or yellow to be precise, is a self-colored dog.
That's a funny word to, that's a funny way of using self.
I know. And when I looked it up, I was like, oh, I didn't know that applied to dogs, because
I would call it monochromatic or something. Yes. Like that, you know.
Where I first learned of the term self is with rats, fancy rats. A self-colored rat is a solid colored rat. And then I saw it in the AKC book and I was like, wow, who knew?
You know, it's incongruous with my understanding of the word self.
Let's get your congruous understanding of the word oregano for our definition du jour.
All right. So speaking of disinfecting and et cetera, there was an interesting little school study. Science studies done in school are interesting because it's usually simplified enough that folks like me can understand it. So there was a little school science project that was reported on in, it was either our group or the shampoos group. And the oil of oregano was very, very effective, like the most effective disinfectant for killing bacteria in a petri dish, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody's running out to buy their oil of oregano and not use alcohol anymore and all of that kind of stuff. But I want to warn people, remember a couple of things. One, natural does not necessarily equate with safe. Just because it's natural and it's found in nature doesn't mean that it's safe. And the other thing is that anything, any substance that can kill life, and microbes, bacteria is life. Anything that is biocidal kills life, can have hazards in using it. Oil of oregano is no exception. There are safety considerations, which are sometimes mentioned and then overlooked. But the two most distinct things are that oil of oregano can cause failure of blood clotting.
That's bad.
They affect the platelet situation in a way that it can be a backfire with anybody that has a clotting disorder. And you don't know when you're working with dogs, you don't know. We know nothing.
The last thing is something that helps us not clot toenails when they're bleeding.
Yeah, right. I've had a couple of bleeder type dogs where they do a simple toenail and, you know, an hour later, you're still pressing stuff into it. Oh, God. I had a German Shepherd dog, and these slightly elderly people brought the dog in. Their daughter was working for me at the time to do a nail clip. And I did a nail clip and I hit a quick, and the dog bled for an hour in my outer room. And the owner was about to faint.
Oh, no.
it was one of the most stressful moments in my career, from a simple nail trimming. Oil of oregano can affect blood clotting, and it can also affect blood sugar level. So it's not advisable for diabetics to use a lot of oregano oil. I'm going to go to my notes and tell you something a little bit more formalized.
Okay.
What's true about oregano oil is that it's high in a phenol. Phenol, spelled with P-H-E-N-O-L-S, they're a category of chemical that is known to be highly antibacterial, but also causes some risk of irritation. So it's high in the phenol called carvacrol, and oil of oregano, for this reason, oil of oregano is one of the essential oils that the author of the book Using Aromatherapy for Animals, Kristen Lee Bell, says it's on the do not use list.
Oregano.
Oregano oil, along with, by the way, cinnamon and clove. And all of these are used in the Young Living Thieves Blend. Thieves Blend it's a good antibacterial, antifungal, et cetera, but it contains these oils that have been identified as possibly harmful for animals. So I would never use oil of oregano. There's other essential oils that you can use that don't have the hazards of carvacrol, that don't have phenols. Phenols are always great disinfectant substances, but because they're killing bio life, they can be too much to just use casually.
Especially when we have something like alcohol that does work effectively and it's cheap.
I know it's cheap. Yeah, it's not like and oil of oregano is not real cheap. It's I did a little bit of research. It can run from $55 to $95 for 16 ounces.
Well, is there anything that we could use oregano oil for?
Right, but why? You can go online and you can see lots of uses. Lots of uses. It's an antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and highly antimicrobial. So it's good for bacterial infections, fungal, toe infections, digestive problems, inflammatory conditions, tumor growth. There's lots and lots of uses. But I say, when we're dealing with animals, why use a substance that has a health hazard for bleeding disorders, allergies, diabetes, and can irritate the skin?
I agree. I think that's very sensible advice, Barbara. How about some more advice? How about some advice on what show season has to offer?
Oh, I want to talk to you a little bit about show seasons. You know, like they have some products that you're just like not normally drawn to, but you need to be alerted to. And this is one of them, and it's the Kennel Fresh deodorant cleanser. It's a cleaner, and it has a proprietary enzymatic blend that enzymatically eats away, removes urine and feces odor. So it's very,
that's a benefit.
It's a great benefit. So you can use it, you dilute it 16:1 or something like that, and you spray it on kennel surfaces. But I spray it when I clean up a clean up on aisle 3, we say, when the dog pees while the owner is not watching it and we're talking at the counter, you know.
At Disneyland, that's a protein spill. A protein spill of the number one type. Or the number two type.
Well, because this cleans and deodorizes, and it's very kind of targeted to bodily, what do you call them?
Fluids,
yeah.
And it smells good?
Yeah, it smells fine. And I use it in my rug cleaning vacuum thing, my rug cleaner. So I use it to clean carpeting in my home. Mm. It's great for that. It's just, you know, you can spray it when you see it, but when you don't see it anymore, but you know there's odor in there.
Yeah.
The Kennel Fresh in a rug machine is going to just make a huge difference. It's very effective. It was actually one of the first products that Sandy Giorgi developed in show seasons because of some need or request. It's kind of like, so it's kind of a bottom shelf product. It's not the bright, shiny object.
It's a workhorse. You know,
yeah, but it's a workhorse. And if you want to find something that's very safe, that's going to help you with that odor management, and we all need to be very, you know, you don't have to use a ton of bleach. I hate bleach. It's so caustic. It's so reactive, chemically reactive. I just don't like it. But I can use this liberally. I can use a lot of it. Well, I can use it often.
Cool. If you guys want to get yourself some Kennel Fresh, go to the show season website at showseasongrooming.com or give them a call, 678-382-0218, or email your order into them. That way you're going to get the wholesale price. And you can also find it at many of your local distributors like Groomers Mart and my very favorite Cascade Grooming Supply. Okay, one more quick break and then back to our discussion about licensing. Our hands are money makers. We rely on them. How long we last in this career is dependent on how well we care for our hands. Evolution shears were engineered to be the most ergonomic shears out there. They were designed by a team of groomers, sharpeners, and medical professionals with comfort in mind. They started with the observation that all hands were not created equal. In fact, they are all unique and have different needs. Evolution shears are fully customizable with adjustable sizing and your choice of fixed ring, single, or double swivels. I recommend the double swivels. They're my personal favorites. Evolution shears work with your thumb in its natural position, making scissoring in all directions a pleasure. They are made to prevent repetitive stress injuries that occur due to scissoring and keep you from grooming. Lastly, they use high-quality materials but are affordable. They come in curves, straights, thinners, and chunkers, and in a variety of lengths and edges. A good thing for those of us with scissor addictions. There is a learning curve, but don't worry. The staff at Evolution will hold your hand through the whole process. Their customer service is tip-top. You can put your hands on a pair of Evolution shears and say hi to Abby, Ron, and our favorite salesperson, Chris Anthony, at many of the grooming shows. But if you're in a hurry, and you should be, go online to evolutionshears.com or call them at 877 560-3057 and buy yourself a pair or two. Be sure to ask for Chris because she'll take great care of you. But wait, if you act now, okay, you don't have to act right now, but mention the Groom Pod when you place your order or put Groom Pod in the coupon code on the Evolution website and you will receive $10 off each pair of shears. How cool is that? Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. Here we are at the grooming table, Barbara, and we're going to talk about something that is prickly to groomers, and that is the Groomers Licensing Act of New Jersey, or they also call it Bijou's Law. And we, you and I, did this fantastic, spectacular, best ever interview with Chris Anthony last week. I mean, it was an interview to beat all interviews. And then we found out that some of the information she was sharing, she was not allowed to share yet. So we had to pull the interview, which I was really sad about. But that doesn't stop us from talking about the legislation that's happening in New Jersey.
Can we say that the type of information that she shared that what she wasn't supposed to be sharing had to do with proposed changes in the law? So, because I think people are curious, what could she have said that she's not allowed to say? Well, we were talking about perfecting and recommending changes that are on the table for the New Jersey legislature to review. And it's not public information yet. That's all.
Yes. But it is stuff that she is very active in a part of changing the legislation or trying to affect the way the bill is actually written. The truth is the bill is not law yet, so there's still time to make some adjustments to this. But it's an interesting law the way it's written. The first thing that comes to mind is that it creates a board of individuals who are going to kind of oversee this whole process. And that board of individuals is going to include, the majority will be groomers, but it'll also have vets and a council person and normal people. What do you call them? Civilians. And this board that will be created is going to have the pleasure, honor, and challenge of disseminating this law. And that's where it's going to be really tricky. We don't know who's going to be on the board yet or how you get on the board. But we do know is that the board will have a lot of influence in the decision-making process of the way the laws apply.
For example, the board is going to be approving and naming topics for continuing education. Now, see, that blows my mind as a person who's making webinars on ingredients and stuff like that. Like, are my topics going to be considered relevant for continuing education for groomers under this particular board? So there's all kinds of interesting little side effects, but basically it's a licensing law. It's a law to require to be licensed by the state.
And that there will be some testing. There is some question as to who's going to administer the test, but the board will certainly be influencing how they do the testing and all of that. There'll be a fee. So you'll pay $75 and it's good for 2 years. So then 2 years later, it'll be $50 to renew at the way it stands now. There will be some requirements maybe for continuing education. I believe that might have been in there. Also, some regulations that apply to the salon and how you run your business in the ways you treat the pets and things like that. There's a clause in there that talks about heated dryers, another one that talks about caged facilities, requiring the dogs to be in a cage when they're not being worked on. There are provisions in here for schools. There are provisions in here for bathers and training and apprenticeship, I think. Another important thing that's in this bill is the incident report. So you're required to report incidents, which can be a little bit of a wide-ranging area as to what is an incident, but they're trying to narrow that down as they work through this legislation. But I think that any reporting of incidents is probably a good thing. It protects us. It protects the client.
I think it protects us. I had wished I had written up an incident. You can start writing an incident reports now because it's a good thing to have on hand if a customer sues you.
And that's just not a note on their card, but you could actually have a separate file with that stuff. And they're going to require that that gets sent in quarterly or something like that to the board. Also, you got to be a good, decent human being. You want to be ethical and moral and whatever that means. You want to be a decent person in good standing in the way you operate your business. You don't want to be a
no
bad
scumbags. Business.
Yeah, no scumbag. That doesn't mean you can't be in recovery like me, or even if you want to smoke pot or whatever. It just means that you run your business in a manner in which is morally and ethically good. So I think that's totally reasonable.
I hate that. So you might think that's
weird.
I'd like to see that just like out of there. Grooming has always been an industry where you could pick yourself up by the bootstraps and resurrect like a phoenix. You know, and I mean, of course, I don't want horrible criminal types opening up a grooming salon, but it's too public. They wouldn't be doing it anyway. It, you know, like the few criminal types or people of bad character. I just don't like the idea of a board of talking heads having the ability to judge my character.
Well, when we were talking about this with Chris, I also had my spidey sense went crazy with that. But she said it's in all of the legislation, that terminology is in all the legislation. Well, it's just weird, though. It's a weird clause. That is a weird clause that they feel that it needs to be included. The thing to remember here is that none of this is set in stone yet, but to influence the legislators, you're going to have to get active. And even more importantly, we know that this stuff is going to happen because it is happening. So maybe you want to get proactive in your own neighborhoods. Like us here in Washington State, we're getting groups together to talk, at least talk about this kind of legislation, so that maybe when they come to your state, the groomers can be the ones writing the bills instead of the ones trying to go back in and influence them after they're written.
Right. Licensing is going to happen sooner or later. And the reason that we're all interested in this New Jersey law is because it's likely to become a template. Because almost all legislation is, it's just the way lawyers work. They go back and look at what other states are doing or have done, and they use that as a template for their own law instead of reinventing the wheel in every state. So this law is likely to become the outline for other states to use. And that's why we're interested in an open discussion about it, about the process. For one thing, I'm curious about how an ordinary person would go about getting some legislation started. You know, I would love to start some legislation about having ingredient transparency in our industry. But so let's kind of follow the process of this Bijou's law and see how it might become. It's kind of a Sesame Street thing, right, live and in person with us.
So Barbara and I have been chewing about and have actually reached out to the lady who lost the dog to see if she'd like to come on and we could talk to her about exactly that. Not about her losing the dog, but about the process of writing the legislation that is now actually probably likely going to pass and her journey in that. And what I'd like to know is, do you guys feel okay about that? Because we know she's been controversial in some other groups, and we are actually a For the Groomers group here at the Groom Pod. We're on the groomer side, but we are also fair and like to hear the other people's point of view. But more importantly, we want to know how to get legislation passed so that when it shows up in our state, we can have an effect on it. So we're considering having her on, doing an interview, or at least Barbara and I talking to her. But if that is too horribly offensive to anyone, let us know and we will consider your opinion. I'm not saying we won't do it, but we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, there does seem to be a train of thought that you see popping up. It's like, why give her a voice? Well, I don't quite see it that way, because I think that it's interesting and informative to learn about processes and things that can go wrong in the grooming shop and what can happen as a result. We need to know.
I agree. So anyway, give us the feedback and let's run out of here, Barbara. We're done. Let's go. We're done.
We're done. Yay.
Fiddle. All right. Yay. Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it. We appreciate all of your support. It's the holidays. Do your shopping on Amazon. Click on our Amazon banner at our website, and you will help me pay the gigantic, enormous hosting bill that is coming up in the next month. I'm so excited for that. Anyway, we are going to be having no problem at all paying it because of your support. Thank you so much. And continue to share us with your friends, support our sponsors, and meet us back here next week for another episode of the Groom Pod. Happy grooming, everybody. Bye-bye now.
Bye, guys. Take care of yourselves.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.